Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, we go nuts and learn why snacking on almonds, walnuts, and other nuts has been linked to a reduced risk of chronic diseases.
But first, every drug in your medicine cabinet, whether available by prescription or sold over the counter, follows the same path to your door. During research and development, each is evaluated for safety, effectiveness, and the correct dosage. These studies, known as clinical trials, begin with a small group of participants who willingly test these drugs. In doing so, they advance medical science by allowing researchers to know what works and what doesn't.
What are the potential risks and benefits of clinical trials? How are they conducted? And who oversees that process? Joining us is Dr. Lindsay McNair, Chief Clinical Research Officer for WIRB Copernicus Group, a leading independent institutional review board which provides human research protections and ethical research support in the field of drug development. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. McNair. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm not sure that people can appreciate the path a drug takes. You find it on the drugstore shelf, but it may have been years before it actually got to that point. And clinical trials play a huge role in whether or not a new drug gets approved in the United States. Would you describe the process for us?
Sure. So as you said, there is a clinical trial process for the development of any new drug. Usually that breaks down into three main steps. In phase one of clinical research, the drug is tested for the first time in a small number of volunteers to primarily look at the safety of the drug and figure out what is expected to be the target range for the dosage. In phase two of testing, which comes next, the drug is tested in a larger number of volunteers. And in addition to getting more data about safety and trying to focus the dose and dose regimen even more, it's also looked at for efficacy in those studies. So those tests are usually done in people who actually have the disease or the condition that the drug is intended to treat or to improve. Phase three of drug development is done in the largest number of subjects, and those studies are really done primarily to get good data on the efficacy of the drug, often compared to the available current therapies, if there are any, and also to get more information on the safety. And then the combination of the data that came from all of those studies is used to determine whether or not the risks compared to the benefits of the drug are significant enough that it should be approved for people to be able to use.
I understand that only about one out of 100 drugs that starts being tested in people actually makes it through development to become a medicine that's approved for sale. But starting at the beginning, who comes up with the ideas for these studies?
Well, the ideas for studies can come from a lot of people. Often they come from doctors who are treating patients with certain diseases or illnesses and recognize that there is an unmet need for a certain kind of treatment. So sometimes those doctors will come up with the ideas for studies. Sometimes the studies that they do are testing new drugs that haven't been approved yet, or sometimes they're testing new combinations or new regimens of drugs that are approved to see if they work better in combination or in different dosages. Sometimes the ideas for the studies come from pharmaceutical companies or from divisions within medical centers that are actually looking at new chemicals and new drugs to see if they could be new medicines.
I know we think in terms of, you know, drugs and medicines that we take, but this same rigorous process is applied to other things too, right? Like medical devices or procedures that, you know, there has to be a way for certain procedures that are done to us, you know, to improve and get better over time. Do they go through that same clinical trial process?
They go through some parts of the same process. Medical devices have a regulatory division of the FDA that oversees the development of medical devices, and it depends what type of medical device it is. Even like something like a Band-Aid is considered a medical device. For things that are considered pretty safe, they don't really go through a lot of clinical testing before they're allowed to be used. But medical devices that are things that will be used as instruments during surgical procedures or that are new heart valves or something like that do go through rigorous clinical trials to prove that they're effective and safe before they can be approved. Procedures are a little bit different. There is no regulatory body that has oversight of the development of new procedures or new surgical techniques or something like that. But within most hospitals and institutions, they have a body within the institution called an institutional review board. And those bodies would review any studies that are being done for the research on a new procedure.
I would imagine that the process is not inexpensive. So who funds these studies?
Well, the funding can come from a lot of sources. It can come from the person who owns the drug that's being tested, and sometimes that's the pharmaceutical company. Sometimes it's a hospital or medical center. Sometimes it's even the doctor who invented the drug themselves. The funding can also come from organizations like the National Institute of Health or the National Cancer Institute, which give grants to support clinical trials for new drug development as well. And then there are a number of private organizations like advocacy groups that can also help support clinical trial work.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking to Dr. Lindsay McNair. She's Chief Clinical Research Officer for WIRB, Copernicus Group, and we're talking about clinical trials. And I suppose there wouldn't be clinical trials if there weren't people willing to participate. So I'm curious to get a little information about why people would choose to participate in a clinical trial and what's required of them.
Well, there are a lot of reasons why people are interested in participating in clinical trials. Clinical trials are designed to get information about the drug that's being tested so that that information can be used to help people in the future. And so a lot of people participate in these trials because they want the information that they can contribute to help people in the future. A lot of people who have illnesses or conditions that are not being adequately treated by the medications that are available to them participate in clinical trials because they hope that the new drug might give them some relief that their current therapies didn't. And then for some clinical trials, especially the first clinical trials, the phase one trials, that are done in a small number of people, those are often done in people who are actually healthy volunteers who don't have the disease being studied. And some of those people participate in studies because they get compensated for their time.
If you did have a disease that was being studied and you were offered a clinical trial by your physician, do you ever have to worry that maybe you're going to get a placebo? I mean, what if you need something to stay healthy? How do they test whether an alternative approach is as effective without putting that participant in harm's way?
There are studies which use a placebo control in the study, but there are very strict ethical guidelines for when a placebo is acceptable to use. And those include situations like where there is no available effective therapy for the drug, or for when a delay in treating the condition will not cause any worsening of the condition or any increased symptoms during the time of the delay while that person is taking the placebo. So the regulatory agencies and the institutional review boards, which are the ethical committees that have to approve these studies before they can be conducted, look very carefully at any study that includes a placebo group if the placebo is the only treatment that people would be getting in one of the arms of the study to make sure that those conditions are met. If a placebo group is not found to be ethical, then the people in that study would actually be getting whatever is the standard treatment for the disease compared to the new treatment being tested. So they don't have to worry that they wouldn't get treated at all.
I imagine that there are some situations in which during testing, efficacy just really isn't there, or there may be some adverse effects that were not anticipated. How do they know when to stop a study?
That's absolutely true. That situation does happen a lot of the time. In some studies, which are open label studies, which means that people can be looking at the data as it's collected, it may be the physicians responsible for the study who make the decision that the study should stop. In larger trials or trials that are what we call blinded, which means that the doctor and the patients don't know whether or not they're getting the active drug, there is a separate group of experts who looks at the data at different intervals during the study, and they have predefined criteria for when they would find that a study should be stopped. And those criteria could include that there is evidence of efficacy of the new drug that is so strong that it is no longer ethical to not give people the new drug. So the study would be stopped early for overwhelming efficacy. And that does happen. It's not common, but it certainly does happen. Or it could be that the study is stopped because they're seeing safety issues that were not predicted. That certainly happens as well. And that's actually more common. Or they could stop the study for futility, which means they're not seeing safety issues. But it is clear that even if they let the study continue, the new drug is not going to work as well as it was hoped that it was going to work. So there's no point in asking people to continue in the study.
Dr. McNair, how long do studies generally last? I'm sure it varies, but in general, how long do they last?
It does vary. It varies quite a bit. For those phase one studies in healthy volunteers, those might just be each of the volunteers in the study getting a single dose of drug. So for any individual person, the study may only last a couple of days or maybe a week or two. For the later stages of studies, it really depends on how long the treatment for the disease needs to last. So if it's, for example, a chemotherapy study, it could last a minimum of 3 months for every participant or continue for as long as they are continuing to respond to the drug. If it's a study for something that is a medication that would be used on a chronic basis, like a new medicine for high blood pressure that someone might take for the rest of their life, then the study is usually at least 1 year in duration, so everybody is taking the drug for at least 1 year. Now, in addition to that period where people are actually taking the drug, the study is longer because it takes a fairly long time to get all of the volunteers enrolled in the study. Everybody doesn't start the study on the same day, and sometimes that can take years in a big study just to get everyone started. And then there's usually also a follow-up period after the study as well, so that when people stop the drug, they're watched for a certain period of time to make sure that they have no safety events that occur even after the drug has been stopped.
You know what I was wondering about when we were researching this is, who decides and how do they decide how many side effects are acceptable when a drug gets approved? For instance, the pros have to outweigh the cons, but I'm sure part of the clinical trial is to see what negative effects a drug may have, even if it is successful in what they were testing it for. Like, take something like statins to lower cholesterol. We've heard that there are some side effects, like, let's say, muscle aches and pains in some people. Well, obviously, statins are a very popular drug, and that did not outweigh them approving it. So who looks at all the data in the end and gives the final approval? And how do they make a decision like that? Do you know?
So in the United States, the group that makes that final decision is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. So in addition to getting the data from all of those clinical trials, not just the results, not just the conclusions from them, but the actual raw data that was collected so that they can do their own analyses on the data as well and look at what they consider to be the balance of the risks and the balance of the benefits. And then the FDA also relies on what are called advisory committees. And these are committees of external experts in certain medical areas that the FDA will convene. And the owner of the drug will present the data to the advisory committee, and the FDA will also present their conclusions about the drug to the advisory committee. And the FDA will ask the advisory committee for their opinion about whether or not the benefits of the drug outweigh the risks and whether or not the drug should be approved. The FDA is not bound to follow the recommendations of that advisory committee, but they usually do. And those meetings are open to the public. Anyone can watch the advisory committee meetings and see the decision-making that goes on behind the process.
Dr. McNair, we have only about a minute left, but how would a patient know of a clinical trial in their area if they weren't provided that information by their doctor? Is there somewhere they can go to find this out?
Absolutely. There are lots of websites that include clinical trial listings that people can search if they're interested in a clinical trial. For specific diseases, for example, if someone has breast cancer, There may be specific breast cancer websites that list breast cancer trials in the area, but there are also websites that list trials in all different indications. One of the largest ones is called clinicaltrials.gov, and that's run by the government. Everyone is required to list their trials in that. And there are other groups, like a group called CenterWatch, that also maintain pretty comprehensive databases that allow you to search for a type of trial and the geographic area and other factors like that.
And we will make sure to have those sites on our website. Thank you so much, Dr. McNair, for your time. Dr. Lindsay McNair is Chief Clinical Research Officer for WIRB Copernicus Group, a leading independent institutional review board.
Thank you.
For more information on clinical trials and Dr. Lindsay McNair, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available on our website and on iTunes.
Coming up, what's the better snack choice, pistachios or popcorn? Find out why you should consider adding a handful of nuts to your diet. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.